You're listening to Feminist Frequencies. I'm Maggie Berner. Last week, we talked about Sybil Harold, who is one of the first women in recorded history to broadcast in the industry as we know it today. This week, we have another one of those firsts, Eunice Randall. Like Sybil Harold, her journey in broadcast started in the mid-1910s, with Morse code. Due to these being in the same era, both of them would have had to have taught themselves or have had a little bit of help from friends and family. But regardless, Eunice Randall was teaching herself Morse code and even sending out messages in Morse code. One of those messages was picked up in 1918. The person who picked up her broadcast would be Irving Vermilia, who was two towns away at the time, according to The Wanderer. He told her that her father should have taught her better, but referred to her as little boy. She responded and told him, "By the way, I'm not a little boy. I'm a girl." That chance encounter from two towns away via Morse code was how he ended up picking her up and mentoring her so that she would go on to become an accomplished broadcaster. He even helped her to get her job at her very first station, which was an AMRAD station. We'll get a little bit more into this station later, but more on him. Irving Vermilia was born in 1890 and was also interested in code. Vermilia was even similar to Charles Harold, who we talked about in relation to Sybil Harold last episode. They were both alive in the years where radio was just becoming a thing, and that really inspired his interest in it, according to bostonradio.org. That's how he developed his interest in code, which led him to making that connection to Eunice Randall. He and Eunice Randall would even go on to work together for many, many years after this, even becoming friends for life. They were such good friends, in fact, that they would even get into friendly competitions, particularly with code sending. QCWA.org even talks about these contests that they would get into together and how they would occur at hamfests. They encouraged each other's work and challenged each other throughout both of their careers, although he would go on to pass away in 1964. Eunice Randall was born in Mattapoisett, Massachusetts in 1898, making her almost 10 years younger than Irving Vermilia. She had to teach herself about Morse code and ham radio, because it would have been atypical for her to have been able to go to school for broadcast at this time period. Her original plan was actually to go to school for art, as she was, after all, born before women could vote, as the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame website notes. Obviously, this lack of technical training did not stop her in how she managed to learn Morse code so well that she was able to catch someone's attention, get a mentorship, and get hired at her first radio station, AMRAD. We'll talk a little bit more about AMRAD in just a few minutes, and how it would lead her to meet her husband, Ken Thompson, although they wouldn't get married until after the station went bankrupt and closed. You might have noticed that her husband isn't Irving Vermilia. He just took that place as her mentor, although they were not directly related or married in any way. I think what this goes to show is that, genuinely, anyone can have an impact on your life and on your career. You don't have to be family. You don't have to be married. You don't have to be related. Just for someone to genuinely take an interest in your life to the point where she was then able to really prosper in her career and develop her skills through her attachment to him. Not to say that her husband also didn't have an impact, but it was really Irving Vermilia who helped her to get her start and get hired in 1918. While Eunice Randall didn't necessarily have education or even the voice to be able to achieve the things that she did, it didn't stop her from making a name for herself in broadcast, even if her start wasn't what you would expect. Like I mentioned, it only took a little bit of code to catch Irving Vermilia's attention, leading to the mentorship between the two. This was again in 1918 when he was two towns away. And past that initial understanding where he referred to her as little boy, and she had to correct him, saying that she was, in fact, a girl, that didn't stop him from taking an interest in her, leading, again, to that mentorship. This mentorship would get her her first job at her first station, that AMRAD station. but she was still already pretty accomplished by that point, considering that to broadcast the Morse code to get to him, she had to build what was essentially her own amateur station, according to South Coast Today. But then she made it to her first official station, the AMRAAD station. This AMRAAD station would also be known as 1XE. Eunice Randall would be the first woman that was hired at this station in 1918 after making this connection to Vermilia. Now, due to the atypicalness of the situation, Miss Randall certainly went through some struggles after being hired. She wouldn't have been on air until 1919, but she still worked with the station before this. Keep in mind, this is the mid to late 1910s, so in this time period, women would have been more hired for roles like a receptionist or a secretary, something that wouldn't have required the amount of technical skill that Randall would have needed to be in the radio industry, but it was something that she was deeply interested in and deeply passionate about, leading her to continue to pursue it even with the struggles that she faced. These struggles might not seem unfamiliar even today. Unfortunately, again, due to the unusualness of the situation and the fact that she was a woman in a highly technical field surrounded by men, Eunice Randall would have absolutely been hazed going into this environment. While they wouldn't have necessarily even had a word for it at this point, it's also very likely that she was sexually harassed by the men around her. That being said, she did not let these struggles stop her from continuing to pursue this career. She was incredibly determined to be a part of the radio industry after discovering her passion and skill for such a thing. She would even meet her husband at the station, although they wouldn't be married until long after the station had gone bankrupt in 1925. Early on in this episode, I made a point to compare Eunice Randall to the subject of our previous episode, Sybil Harold. The reason that I did this was to demonstrate the similarities between women in broadcast in this time period, but also, this is where I'd like to make the distinction between the two women. Sybil Harold's career primarily revolved around her first husband, Charles Harold, and after she had stopped working with his station back in the beginning and supporting it in all of the ways that she didn't really continue to work in the broadcast industry, although she would go on to talk about her husband's achievements and support the station in that way later on in her life after her ex-husband's death. This is where the distinction comes in. Eunice Randall's station, AMRAAD, would go bankrupt in 1925. But regardless, after this station had gone bankrupt and gone off the air, she didn't really broadcast with a single station again for the rest of her career. That being said, it didn't stop her from broadcasting whatsoever. She would have still been working with Irving Vermilia in this time period, where they would have absolutely influenced each other, but she also influenced other people as a part of that. It's also important to mention that the rest of her career wasn't just traditional broadcast. She still worked a lot with code and ham radio, the way that she got into broadcast in the first place. This was especially important during World War II, when she was a WERS volunteer and was helping others to learn how to code as well in this time period in order to help the war effort. Other notable achievements of hers after AMRAAD had gone bankrupt included the work that she did with the New England Power Association, as well as, again, her competing with Irving Vermilia and the conventions that they both participated in. She even had her own call letters as a part of this. Another one of her achievements, as listed in the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame, included how she set up a ham radio network for the blind and continued to mentor young people throughout the rest of her life. For all that I have talked about Eunice Randall's achievements, specifically with who she was connected to, the stations that she worked for, and her other achievements, I haven't really had the chance to get into the specific roles that she held and the specific things that she did as a part of her career. I would argue that Eunice Randall actually started off as more of an engineer than she started off as a broadcaster, while she certainly did her fair share of both. The reason that I say this is because in order to have her coding background and be able to broadcast, she had to first learn some of those basic skills to install her own equipment and to fix her own equipment if it were broken. In fact, that was initially why she was hired on at the AMRAAD station that she was a part of. That first year, she was working with the equipment rather than working on the air, although she would eventually go on the air. Once she was on the air, she would broadcast things like police reports and bedtime stories. This is very similar to Sybil Harold's Little Hams program, but instead of it being the Little Hams program, Eunice Randall would become known as the Story Lady. It's also important to mention that children were not her primary audience. She actually had quite a number of fans, which, again, considering that she was a woman in broadcast in this time period, would have been a bit unusual. It was mentioned in the trailer that one of the things that typically seem to hold women back in broadcast is their actual voices. It wasn't just a lack of qualification or a lack of education in the industry at the time, but there was sort of this stigma around women's voices that they were less desirable to listen to. This didn't necessarily reflect in Eunice Randall's popularity, as she wasn't just popular with children. She was also popular with adults and would continue to get fan letters even after 5 years of being on the air. Her two sets of skills would have also worked together in this time period as well. It wasn't that she was just an engineer or just a broadcaster, she was both. She would have been able to fix her own equipment, set up her own amateur station, and then that would have had an impact on her professionalism and on her skill with the AMRAAD station and beyond that as well. It's also important to mention how the early days of radio also would have impacted her career as well. This is before anything could have really been pre-recorded. So, one part of being on the air and having to entertain people was having to entertain people if guests didn't show up, something that she was particularly good at doing, according to research done by Donna Helper. We'll talk more about Ms. Helper specifically later. We've been talking about Eunice Randall here on Feminist Frequencies. Now, in listing off all of her achievements and accomplishments in stations and programs, there are a few things that I have not mentioned, primarily because I think they have more to deal with her impact on broadcast and, honestly, feminism as a whole, than they did with her specific jobs. First of all, she was quite young when she started broadcasting. Specifically, she would have been around the ages of 18 or 19 when she would have been broadcasting, had been picked up by Irving Vermilia, and then had been hired at AMRAAD. There was also something that I mentioned earlier on in this episode where she was very insistent upon being recognized as a girl by Irving Vermilia, especially when he mistook her for a young boy. This was not an isolated incident by any means. When she was hired as a draftsman, she would even insist upon being called a drafts lady, according to The Wanderer. I think this is so poignant of the kind of person that Eunice Randall was. A lot of words for what she might have been considered didn't exist back in those days. The word feminist wouldn't have really been how she would have described herself, despite her actions and her words demonstrating these similar ideals. Through her broadcasting, she would also go on to inspire and encourage other women to get into the industry as well. Donna Helper, who has demonstrated a particular interest in Eunice Randall's career, has also stated that she doesn't think that Eunice Randall believed in stereotypes, which may have contributed to some of the behavior and language that she used throughout her entire career. Miss Helper would have been one of the women that she inspired throughout the course of her career. Donna Helper will get her own episode later on in the show due to the work that she has done, not just in relationship to Eunice Randall, but also on her own merit. But she in particular is one of the cases that I wanted to highlight. Also, despite not having children of her own, Eunice Randall would influence her family and the young women in her family, particularly one of her great nieces, Cheryl Randall, who has some very fond memories of her aunt. She even goes on to describe what specifically she was like as a person, not just as a broadcaster. She was quite tall, around 6'4", and with a very distinctive voice. She also encouraged women, not just in the realm of radio, but in other matters as well. Between her voice on the air, as well as in her personal life and around her family and around all of the women that she has influenced, Eunice Randall would continue to be a powerful voice on the industry and continues to be a powerful voice in the industry even after she has passed away. Eunice Randall passed away in 1982 after moving to Maine with her husband, Ken Thompson. She was also inducted into the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame in 2011. So, to recap, Eunice Randall would broadcast some Morse code in 1918 that would be picked up by a man named Irving Vermilia. He would then go on to mentor her even throughout the rest of their lives, but it would help her get her first broadcasting job at an AMRAAD station, although that wasn't initially what she'd gotten hired for. Still, she would continue to broadcast for them, and even after the station would go bankrupt in 1925, that didn't stop her from continuing her broadcast career, both with traditional broadcast and in ham radio and Morse code. She would also go on to influence other broadcasters, female and male, by way of her passion and how she would then go on to teach other people. Her encouragement would go past the radio industry as well, although the terms and phrases and language that we now use to describe things like feminism wouldn't have existed back in her time, it's arguable that her impact would have absolutely created the same sort of impact, especially through the language that she used, being insistent upon being viewed as a woman and as a girl, as well as her perseverance in the industry while she was surrounded by men who wouldn't necessarily have treated her very kindly. The work that she did in broadcast would go on to inspire many other people, even people who would go on to use her work as an example and as a basis for research for women in broadcast. For the past couple of episodes, we've been talking about women who've gotten into radio by way of Morse code and their engineering experience, but we haven't talked about women who have taken a different, although somewhat more obvious route into radio, at least by today's standards. Next week on Feminist Frequencies, Mary Margaret McBride, the First Lady of Radio. You've been listening to Feminist Frequencies. I'm Maggie Berner, signing off.